Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. We're going to be talking to our old pal, Phil Conlon. Hasn't been with us for a while. Well, actually, he's right here now. So
I'm doing good, Phil, and happy to be on the Taylor Report.
Yeah. Wow. We're in this new mode. We're manufacturing these things. You do your Wednesday show, 6 to 9, pardon me.
No, six to eight on Classical Underground. And we do get a show out every week. It's not under the best circumstances, but we're happy to do it and we get it done. So
yeah. How does it feel to you now? Are you getting kind of settled into how it's going to be? You're confident we're all having to adjust to this. It's going to probably
honestly, for a music program, I'd like to be back in the studio, but in terms of how well organized this station is and the volunteers we have and the ability of the station to keep on the air 24/7 is really extraordinary. I mean, it's just wonderful, and it's a great radio station, and we have prospered, and we will get through this period. I'm very optimistic. I do believe that there's a lot of science in the world, and we've dealt with other medical horrors in the past, and I think science will deal with this one. We just have to be patient.
Yeah. So that we won't become patients. Yes.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Well, it is a Taylor Report, and I remind listeners that we're on SoundCloud and Facebook, and you can always go to CIUT.FM and listen online. We have to say, very right off the top here, that there's been a tragedy in Lebanon, terrible explosion, ammonium nitrate, apparently. It is one of the strangest, dumbest tragedies to be learning of, because the first question is, how in the world could that much ammonium nitrate be stored? And the authorities knew. Apparently, all political leaders said they knew. It had been apparently talked about as a possible threat, and yet it happened. And there will be and is going to be an investigation. We want to say that we really care about Lebanon, and it has been going through terrible political and economic crisis, and with COVID-19 added on. And as far as we know, the best thing we can do as individuals is to contact the Red Cross of Lebanon. And I have an address for them. It is redcross.org.lb. One of my favorite sources for authority on these things is the man called the Angry Arab. If you want to know what is to be up to date on really intelligent commentary, I recommend that you check out the Twitter account of the professor from University of California. I know it's near Fresno, but his nickname is the Angry Arab, and he is from Lebanon, and he has wonderful politics. He can irritate many people, but that's what he's there for. He provides very good commentary, and he is recommending that people go to redcross.org.lb. Part that, and you have to go into politics about this matter, because what happens is within hours, political interests begin to accuse or to try to create storylines. And we know that Washington, London, Paris want to make the political organization called Hezbollah the target. They were making it Hezbollah the target before this crisis happened. And well, they've been during the economic crisis, when people have been trying to remove or change a very corrupt government. Everybody seems to agree that the corruption is built into the ruling structure of Lebanon. And the spoilers have been Secretary of State Pompeo and the Saudis, who are very close to the Hariri family, sponsors, you could call them, of the Hariri family, the dominant family in the ruling elite of Lebanon. And the Canadian's government has contributed to the crisis by trying to make the political organization called Hezbollah the bad person, the bad guy. But actually, as we've tried to explain on the Taylor Report, Hezbollah is a democratically elected part of the Lebanese government. And in its region, where it has most political influence, it is overwhelmingly popular. And it would, if we did not have colonial-style governments here, we would long since have had better relations with Lebanon, and we would not be trying to dictate to them who represents Lebanese. Hezbollah has become very popular actually throughout the country because it is, among all the parties, the least guilty of corruption. And it has provided the most power to resist Israeli incursions into Lebanon. And Lebanon is a changed country since the fighters, the armed fighters of South Lebanon under Hezbollah leadership have been holding their ground. The Israelis have not been able to dominate them. Another matter I guess I should raise quickly is that it's very strange that President Macron of France is the first big figure to arrive. It's almost embarrassingly or suspiciously quick that following a horrible event such as this explosion, that the president of France shows up. And why does he show up? The only explanation provided in the Globe and Mail CBC is that, well, they have historic ties. The historic tie is that they were the colonial power. They used to rule there. And it was the French who, in leaving Lebanon partially, insisted on a strange form of government where the president belongs to one religious group, the prime minister belongs to another religious group, the minister of the interior belongs to yet another. They distributed power by what they call it, confession?
By confession, that's right. They say confessional, and then they turn around and accuse the Lebanese of all being sectarians because they have this arrangement, which was forced on them by the French in the first place.
Yeah, it was the French idea. So here's Macron doing a walkthrough, which looked like he was running for office, on a people who he says to them while he's visiting them, there's not going to be any blank check because you have to change the leadership around. And now he doesn't mean break down the confessional system. He means Hezbollah has to be taken care of or removed. And so he is in lockstep with Secretary of State Pompeo. And of course, trading along like a poodle is Canada, who will agree with them. But it's a monstrous, hypocritical thing for him to show up there and say, oh, I'm not writing any blank check. And also for his friends in Lebanon, and he doesn't have a lot, but the ones who brought him there ganged around him and treated him like a movie star. And that element in the Lebanese leadership is calling for the return of French influence. They're saying, put us under trusteeship, basically, for 10 years so that we can straighten out our problems. Macron can't straighten out the problems of France. The people of France nearly burned him at the stake. He had one full year of mass resistance to him. And here he is going to Lebanon and thinking that they're gonna ask him to rule them. If they try to move forward with this, this is going to turn into a real dangerous Libya-like situation where the imperialists come back and they say they're doing you a favor. My guess, he was jealous of Hillary Clinton, that she was able to destroy Libya. He would like to destroy Lebanon and make it his backyard. But all based on the fact that the French used to rule. And the last point on that I would make is that everybody should be reminded of what President Assad of Syria said about this situation. He said, when France left here, the day that they left was the day that they began their plans to return. And when you see Macron standing there in the rubble, you have to think, well, exactly as President Assad said, this is a plan to bring imperialism in the flesh back onto the territory of Lebanon and Syria. Remembering, if I have to also say, that Lebanon was once part of Syria.
Phil, I think we should tell our listeners, because it was not reported in the local press, but that within hours of the explosion, Syria, which is a poor country right now and has been racked by COVID as well as by the remnants of the war, was sending over the road, over the highway, in the hundreds, ambulances, and was flying relief supplies by the plane load within hours. And nobody here in the press thought that that was worth mentioning, but Justin Trudeau offered $5 million, but he said, not to the Lebanese government, only to our trusted NGO partners.
Yes. No, that is a very important point. And we have to say this, that this Lebanon in the last 3 months has been under very special increasing sanctions, because they're being dictated by Western banks telling them, for example, they're closing the American University of Beirut, basically. They don't fall, most of the employees fired a bunch of people. And they're using sanctions. This is a weapon. And when you have a crisis like this, the first thing that they should be announced, if speaking with the Canadian people, is, well, we're going to put all sanctions aside now until we have some recovery there. But instead, they're going to use the pain of this explosion, added to the COVID, added to the already economic problem. They're going to add to the pain in order to get what they want politically. And this is, you know, the big choice faced by the Lebanese people. But the fact that Macron came tells you that there's a big game afoot. That this is not something to, you know, say, oh, isn't that nice he visited? Actually, that's the last thing they need, is a big shot. What they need is help. And you're right. Syrians already have helped, and the Russians have already helped, and Iran has helped. And one of the planes that landed already with medical supplies was the civilian aircraft that U.S. aircraft buzzed about a week ago. They were flying passengers into Beirut, and American warplanes buzzed it, caused it to have to change its flight path. So that said, it's a one underline that please help them, redcross.org.lb. I think we have some minutes left here to go. Phil, probably lighten this a bit by, we have a baseball crisis. You're the baseball man.
Yeah, well,
are they going to create a baseball bubble like the NBA, or are they going to keep trying to do this?
Well, they're not going to create a bubble, because they're trying to pretend that they can have a semblance of a normal season, and they really can't, because don't forget the NBA and the NHL were in or about to go into playoffs when COVID hit. So you can create a bubble because you restricted the number of teams involved, and they're playing in these, you know, round robin elimination things. But baseball only works during the regular season because you go from city to city to city. And unless you could put everybody all in the same city or two, which they thought of early, by the way, they were going to do it in either Arizona or Florida. But those places, you can't, they're COVID capital, right? So, So what they're doing now, it's very sad. It's, you know, a team can't play games for several days because some players come test positive, and then they all move someplace else. And there's been dissension among the players. Some of them don't want to be there. Some of them don't want to have the restrictions, depending on, you know, their own point of view. I actually didn't watch a game until yesterday. And of course, I wish I hadn't watched it because the poor Blue Jays gave up a home run in the bottom of the ninth and that ended the game. And I go, well, I didn't need to watch
this. We have a new term in baseball, a new term. You heard about this. They don't, they're not going to go, if they go into extra innings after 10, they put a man on second base.
Yeah, that's stupid.
So that's, the announcer said, I can't wait to say that so-and-so hit a lead-off two-run homer.
Or how about
a lead-off batter and you knocked in two runs. That's a
right. That's right. How about a lead-off bunt single on the first pitch that ended the game? There you go. Guy runs. Yeah, that'll happen. Something stupid like that. Anyway, they're really, to me, baseball right now is thrashing about that. They don't know what to do. And I hope they get it straightened out. Or we might have to go to all those places in the world where they still love the sport and they're playing it. Dominican Republic, Cuba, Venezuela, Korea, Japan, Taiwan. Yeah. They love baseball in these places. And they're not changing the rules.
They haven't changed their rules.
No, they're not changing the rules. The rule they have in Japan is that is very strange to American and Canadian baseball fans, is that you respect the umpire and you don't squawk at him and you don't argue with the umpire and you don't fight, you don't get into fist fights with the players and the other teams. Everybody's very respectful. You bow and all that sort of stuff. So anyway, it'd be nice to have baseball a little civilized here.
Yeah, that is, that's dramatic. Phil, if you could tell me, how many minutes do we got to go here?
We have about 11 minutes to go. And
do we?
I want to hear what you have to say about Mr. Pompeo. Mr. Pompeo went to Nixon's library, and that was a real show for the ages. He's trying to save Western civilization. So the question is, can Western civilization be saved from China?
Is that? Yeah, well, actually, yes. We talked about this on the program last couple of weeks. It's a very important we do need to talk to everyone about the term the new Cold War, which is true. I notice even Chinese commentators use it. They use the term ideological reasoning, that they say the Americans engage in a lot of ideology, and I would say that that's very true. But certainly if people think it's a rerun of the period post-World War II, when the Soviet Union was the target, of course it's not. You know the old thing, that you can't step in the same river twice. Actually, this is a different region, the confrontation, which is coming from Washington, aimed at China. It is an American posture of hostility, of defining a sovereign country as an enemy when there is no material, no evidence or basis. It is, as the Chinese say, ideological. And it is worrying that the government of Canada and all the parties of Canada are in agreement to buy into every wild accusation that the Western intelligence services, the State Department and Canadian intelligence and others manufacture. If we talk about Hong Kong, nothing particularly significant happened there. They had an element within Hong Kong society who had Western sponsorship. They were receiving money from National Endowment for Democracy, and which is, you know, it's basically the old CIA. And they took a path towards the Hong Kong government, calculated to make Hong Kong ungovernable. That was the game. Make it so the you can say to the world, look, we have a failed country because they can't govern. And that was because the Hong Kong police, not an army, but police, were trying to handle a well-organized, well-financed operation directed at them, which engaged in a lot of terrorist tactics, destruction of property, destruction of rail lines, attacks on subways, attacks on civilians. So, all right, that's a national security issue, internal to China. Hong Kong is part of China. You could argue that the Chinese government was very slow in deciding that they would exercise their duty to provide security, which is all they're doing. They have not changed the political system. They haven't changed the legal system. They haven't changed the economy of Hong Kong. It is exactly what they call it, one country, two systems. But the country is protecting the population and creating order so that people can go about their lives, but also can make political choices in an environment that is not violent and directed by outside forces. So, but here, everyone has decided, oh no, this is a splitting issue and we're going to make as much trouble for the Chinese government as possible. They're doing the same with the Uyghur situation, about which everyone in Canada knows zilch, absolutely nothing. And the Globe and Mail will tell them what is the reality of the area of China where the Uyghurs are. The Globe uses the word genocide. They say that, and they reprint stories and remarks by people who do not live in China, but who compile reports based on interviews with third parties, and then create the idea that you have a crisis. There is no crisis. The neighboring states of China do not agree that there is any problem there. They and the Muslim states, and after the Uyghurs are predominantly Muslim, the Muslim states have said China is doing the right thing and is doing well by the Uyghurs. That's the judgment of the Muslim state. So we have this false picture, false story, but we believe it. We're all in our own little bubble, and we take this malarkey straight from the Globe and the Toronto Star, etc., tell these stories. They fail to mention something very important. Well, there is a thing called a war on terror. And everybody agreed there was going to be a commitment to strike at people who use civilians as targets. That's what terror is. So there was three, four years ago, there was a terrorist group operating in the Uyghur area of China. And the Chinese government had to fight that. And they are continuing the fight in political ways. But they have. This is not an anti-Uyghur thing. It's an anti-terror thing, and they should be congratulated on that. And nobody should have any illusions. It was pointed out today by Charmaine Narwani, one of the great journalists. She lives in Beirut, by the way. Thank heavens she survived that blast. She said, "Why don't they talk about the fact that the United States is bombing the Uyghurs in Afghanistan? There is a Uyghur unit fighting with on the terrorist side, as they call them, in Afghanistan. There are 2,000 armed Uyghurs fighting inside Syria. Those are straight out terrorists. Now, Chinese are not imagining things. Those same elements were fighting inside China, and they have defeated them, and they intend to keep it that way. So, we are in a very important phase of a political battle to inform people, but also counter propaganda. We are up against a heavy wave of propaganda. And the minimum anyone should do is go to Chinese news sources and find out what they have to say about these matters. For example, the word genocide. I pointed out on the show before, I will repeat. 40 years ago, there were 5.5 million Uyghurs. Today, 40 years later, there are 11 million Uyghurs. That doesn't sound like genocide to me. And they say that they're anti-Islamic. There are 24,000 mosques in the Uyghur area. So get real. They have protected Islam. They have protected the population. And we have to fight off the liars. And I would recommend Ben Norton of Gray Zone has done a brilliant job of exposing all this. And of course, the Chinese stand up very well for themselves. And you should go right to the source. The Chinese foreign ministry is available. Read what they have to say. It's closer to absolute reality than anything coming out of Ottawa or Washington, Paris. So this is, I want to thank Phil for being here. It was great seeing you, Phil.
Good to see you, Phil, and good to hear you every week.
But they'll just have to pine away. Mm-hmm. And this is Phil Taylor for the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and we'll see you next week.